Okie dokie, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Right, let's say hello to our next guests. We'll start with Joe McBride, year head of Transition Year. Is that you, Joe? It is, yeah.
Hello, yeah.
Hi, good Greg. Morning to you. How are you getting on?
Good morning.
And we have a number of guests joining us. Who's with you there now?
So I have four Baltic students here who've been engaged in a year-long cross-border project with Portadown College in Armagh. We have Kevo Doherty here. We have Owen McGovern, Emily Olsen, and Aoife Callan just off camera.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll get... So we have Kiva and Owen on screen with us now beside you. We'll focus on that, and I'll have a chat with Aoife and Emily. Right, so the Preto for Progression project. Talk to us a little bit about it, Joe, first, if you don't mind, just to set it up for us.
Yeah, so I suppose it started a couple of years ago with online exchanges with a previous year group, and then it evolved sort of organically and got extra funding from very generously funded by the International Fund for Ireland and expanded into intensive residentials and basically brought 20 students from Portadown College in Armagh with 20 students from our own school studying politics, brought them together to work on finding issues that they could have found common ground on and issues that were political or social issues that they felt passionately about and that they wanted to effect some kind of change on. And it sort of developed over the year. And yesterday we were up in Oma at a dissemination event to disseminate basically how the action projects that they worked so hard on, how they came together and the results of them.
Right. So, Kiva, there's three main issues, the first being political disengagement and youth participation in politics generally, I suppose. And in a way, yous are engaging, right? Talk to me a little bit about that. What was the commonality that you found amongst the various students?
So we found that just youth voice isn't really heard and we aren't really listened to as much as older people or engaged with as much with politicians. So we wanted to combat that and try and get young people involved in politics more.
Yeah, and I think one of the critical things is your vote has to matter, and your vote can only matter if politicians see you registered to vote once you're able to at 18, and then they start sort of campaigning for that vote. At the moment, they know the demographic, right, that votes, and a lot of conversation and policies are directed in that at that group. But Kiva, you feel, are you, or do you, that, you know, youth issues aren't an issue?
I think that youth issues are issues. That
for us, I mean, I'm on about for the decision makers, Kiva, I beg your pardon.
Yes, no, I do think that they should be combated and they should listen to us. And I think getting registered to vote is the first step in that. And the deadline to register to vote ends today for the election. And we prepared a campaign for voting in our school and we got all 18-year-olds. There was 33 in our year group registered to vote.
Wow, that's amazing. That's brilliant. So anyone who could vote and was inclined to was registered?
Yes, we got everyone registered. That
fantastic.
Will be 18 by the end of this month or are already 18.
What is, for you, Kiva, the number one issue? What's most important to you?
I think the future, college, cost of living is crazy, housing crisis, those are the few main issues.
Which are actually relevant to an awful lot of people, not just younger people. Owen, what have you learnt through this process?
So, I suppose I was a member of the climate group, but I think we did find, even among just working with each other, youth don't feel like they're being listened to. And yeah, this project, I think, really gave us that opportunity to create change in our communities where maybe we felt powerless to.
And Owen, when do you believe, is it the situation sort of that, like, currently we're the custodians of the environment, right? And we're living for the now, we're living fast and loose. And is it a sense that younger people feel that maybe we're being irresponsible and that it's you guys that eventually are going to have to pick up the tab? Is that kind of the sense that's out there?
I think that is kind of there's a fear among young people. We kind of understand that the world we will live our whole futures in will be created not by the policies of tomorrow, but by the policies of today. And we feel that the elected politicians, really the whole leaders of the world, aren't listening to that. Mm. They don't really care, you know.
Do you think young people, though, are prepared to make the sacrifices, i.e. look at international travel, look at using public transport more, be conscious of what you're burning in the house in terms of for heating that house or how you dispose of waste? Like, you know, it's one thing talking about it, but do you think young people, when faced with that reality, are going to be prepared to walk the walk? Because I think that's what's the problem with the current generation. People don't want to make those sacrifices for the greater environmental good.
I think young people, at least the ones I've talked to who are aware of the issue, are very much prepared to make that sacrifice because they understand how much they'll be sacrificing if they don't. You know, we're seeing across the world right now an unprecedented amount of ecological catastrophes, even in the past few weeks, you know, with what happened in Spain. So I think people are scared, you know. People understand that, you know, what they'll be sacrificing is really not much compared to their livelihood.
Yeah, for the greater good. Kiva, before I bring our other two students in, I presume there's shared concerns. The top three issues, political disengagement and youth participation, we've talked about. Environmental, there's an environmental group which we've heard from Owen there. And the third important issue is mental health. And you know, a lot of people would agree that we need more policy, more investment in that area. But was it hard to come to an agreement with what the key issues were with your Northern Irish counterparts, Kiva? Or was it the same?
We had a lot of the same ideas. There was a few topics on our side, such as the MICA, that we were very passionate about, but they didn't know as much on. So we had a kind of a vote where we gave a 3-2-1, number them, and stick a sticky note onto which topic we thought was most important to focus on. And the three main ones that got the most votes then were the ones we focused on.
Yeah. And Owen, I mean, you know, I think what's really quite important is you're coming up with suggestions, local-based solutions, because I think, you know, the environment is local, right? We can't always look to what China or America is doing. That's what we do. That's our get-out clause, isn't it? You know, Donald Trump says, drill, baby, drill, so we do whatever the hell we like, because what's the point? I'm not saying that's the case, but that's, you know, that's the argument that's made. And swap shops to counteract fast fashion, I like that. And we're starting to see some of that pop up around the county as well, because that is the new fashion, I think, to be conscious of that. For now, both of you, thank you very much. I might have a chat to Aoife and Emily, if that's okay. And just to let you know, we're speaking to members of the Pareto for Progression project. It's an innovative cross-border project sponsored by the International Fund for Ireland, and it's connecting Loreto Community School in Milford and Portadown College in County Armagh with various focuses. And there is a mental health group comprising of Aoife Callaghan and Emily Olson. Aoife, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
And Emily, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you?
Right, okay. So what are the main issues, guys? I'll start with you, Aoife, in terms of mental health. And why is this one of the key concerns?
Well, we find that it's like an extreme issue with young people, but a lot of the conversation is about young people, and we found talking to the other group that it's also an issue with the elderly, like feeling isolated from society. And we thought that we could bring this in by doing some actions. Like, we met with our over 65s group in Milford. They came to the school and we had like a wee tea and talk with them, and they gave us some words of advice, and we thought this was helpful because it battled their isolation and it also gave them advice for young people that are dealing with mental health issues.
Yeah, interesting. And Emily, a lot of conversations I would have on this, they all come back to the same thing. You know, together we're better. I think the more isolated we become, be it teenagers or people in the mid-years or older people, the worse it is. And a lot of the solutions, Emily, seem to be about us, you know, being more community-minded, more community groups. Is that your view, Emily?
Yeah, like even when we brought in the over 65s group, it was really nice, like getting the words of wisdom from them as well. And like we've linked up now with Aris O'Donnell in Mulford, the nursing home, and we're getting TYs to go down and do pretty much the same with them as well. So it's kind of influencing a lot more as well now.
Yeah, and I think that's a two-way relationship, isn't it? Because the TYs are obviously providing a network for the older people, and vice versa. The more we can learn an awful lot from each other, can't we? So Aoife, what conclusions then did you come to?
We came to the conclusion that it's definitely an issue that was being faced at both sides of the border. Like, it didn't just stop at the border, it was both young people and old people, and that we kind of felt there was a lot of stigma about it, despite the amount of conversations about it. And the whole project just gave us a whole new perspective on the issue and made us more comfortable to like talk about our own past experiences and trying to make other students comfortable to share their stories as well.
Because I think there is an issue with younger people as well. And I think one of the key issues is resilience, okay? And it's sort of a catch-all word. But, you know, in preparing yourself emotionally, mentally and educationally as well for the big bad world, heading off to college, heading into the working environment, you know, and I think in working on that through the younger years, it's actually beneficial during those years. But then as people head into adulthood, because life can be challenging and tough. Emily, throughout this process, have you found you've changed or your views have changed in how you think or perceive things?
Yeah, like obviously there was a big like cultural and social difference between the two schools, but
did that surprise you? Because you're all the same age, really, and not a million miles away.
No, like we were kind of expecting a bit of a difference, but there is a lot of differences between us. But at the same time, we find common ground on stuff like mental health and like the other guys with environmental and like political disengagement. So like we do have similarities, but it was kind of a wee bit shocking that like trying to break down the barriers and stuff. But I think we were really good at doing that as well and making like change.
And change often comes at the ballot box. I don't know what age you two are, but I mean, how keen are you, if you haven't already, when you hit 18, to register to vote and start sort of influencing things if you feel you can at election time? Aoife, you first.
Well, I am 18, and I know definitely when I turned 18, it was one of the main things I did do, because I felt through the project itself, we did meet a lot of politicians, and despite their efforts to come and see us and stuff, I did feel that we were disregarded a lot of the times. I wasn't 18 at the time, so I didn't want my phone.
Didn't matter. No, you didn't matter. Yeah. Emily, I'm not sure again what age you are. I'm being really careful here. It's all right. I don't think you can offend teenagers about their age, but I'm just being careful nonetheless.
No, I'm 17, so I will be registering to vote when I turn 18. But I think like even the past few weeks, we're coming up to like them announcing this election, we've been kind of talking about it, and it's been a big thing at like the lunch table, being like, you're 18, you have to vote and stuff.
Yeah, brilliant. So I'd love to see it, and I'd be really fascinated, and I'm hoping maybe we can do it before the election, is to get people that have never voted before to come in, and I'm really interested to find out, you know, who you might vote for, but for what reasons, you know, not necessarily because someone looks pretty on a poster or something. I'm sure there's much more to it than that. Aoife Callaghan, Emily Olsen, both of you, thank you very much. I'll just have a brief chat with Joe, if that's all right. Joe, I mean, obviously, you know, these are, and I've done interviews with these young people over successive years, and I want to get to a point where I start feeling them impacting on the political landscape, that their views, I hope there doesn't come a point where it kind of pitters out for them. Do you know what I mean? I want to see these young people, but I want to see them at 19 and 20 still really giving a crap, you know, and still trying to make difference and be respected and recognised during election processes. But we're a step in the right direction anyway.
Yeah, without a doubt, Greg. I think it's projects like this plant seeds, and it's actually you're buying on the money. It's the following years when they get into their early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, when I think we're going to see the real impact of projects like this. The enthusiasm is there. It's kind of almost like getting a driving license. A lot of them are excited there with big recruitment drive down and to get them registered to vote down in the computer room last Friday. And there was a sense of a buzz and excitement about it. And that can quickly peter out if they're not equipped with the right knowledge and the skills and the know-how how to affect change. But these young people here, it's been amazing. Some of the stuff they've done, you know, they've created TikToks and some like social media videos on the importance of voting. And some of them have got over, you know, 500,000 views, which is amazing in a short space of time. So they're making an impact. They're well fit to challenge politicians. They've informed a lot of the students in this school on the policies, the main kind of core policies of each of the main political parties contesting the election. So I think that there's an excitement there about even people coming to the door, whereas maybe people of an older generation might lock the door or hide behind the curtains. These guys won't be doing
I
that.
I think sometimes the politicians hide behind the door themselves. All right, brilliant stuff. Well done to everyone. You have a career day tomorrow, do you?
We do, yeah. We have a career day in school tomorrow. So
I think I'm going to that, really, to tell everyone, don't consider journalism. Stick to making TikToks now.
We'll be down there tomorrow.
Okay, that's good stuff. I knew it was Laird Hill, but, you know, then when you put in the stuart, you sometimes you forget. All right, so we'll see you there tomorrow. Listen, fair play to you and all the students there. As I say, the future is bright if they're not just through the school, of course, which they are, but if they're supported and kept engaged and stay in the bloody country. The future is bright with the crew that you have there. Thanks very much for your time. Take care of yourself. All right. Okay. That was Joe McBride. We also heard from Keith O'Doherty, Owen McGovern, Aoife Callaghan and Emily Olson. Ronald Boggs is of Boggs Family Butchers. He's with us now. Hi, Ronald.
No, it's his son, Robert Boggs.
Ah, oh, beg your pardon. Sorry, I see that, Robert. Come here. We heard during the Garda slot, it's been shared on social media about this senseless crap of sign damaging. So what happened and when and what was spotted in the area, Robert?
Well, around 9:15 last night, I was driving to get my sister and brother in my own head. But just before the town, just outside the town around the caravan area at the picnic area on the left-hand side, I seen this white car with an Origin Red white car parked there, and I thought they were illegal dumping. So I stopped then and I seen the boot open and there was four doors open, and the boys then they hopped into the car and they went to drive away. But then I know that laneway, so I went to the other side laneway and blocked it. And they then reversed and turned round and went through the town. And they were going that quick. Then I couldn't get the registration. So I just stopped then. And they went through the Cairn area then. They went through over the bridge. And I just stopped and turned then. And I went back to see what if they dumped anything. And then I noticed there was no welcome to Mallon sign down. That was down. And I seen it in half. It was bent in half. And then I was looking around and I noticed there was another sign missing, and in the ditch then on the side of it, I seen the White Atlantic Way sign lying there too.
I can't get my head around it. What's the issue with the signs?
I have no idea, but the boot was open, so maybe they were trying to take it. They bent one sign in half, but then I noticed the other sign and it was lying there, so I don't know why they didn't take both of them, you know, and they didn't grind them off. They just took them off the bolts, like the brackets are all sitting there. And it was a very strange time, like, you know, I thought you'd do it a little late at night, but it was only 9:15, like.
Is there a value in these signs for melting them down or something, Robert? I know I haven't a clue. I'm not sure if you do, but I just can't see the motivation.
I don't really know. A man this morning told me that aluminium's meant to be a good price now, but I don't understand the point of taking a sign. But it has happened before in my own head, I mean, a month ago.
Yeah.
There were signs missing too, but I don't see the point of it.
No, but you spotted a white Northern Regged car.
It looked like a Vauxhall Astra, that sort of shape.
Crazy.
Like a small wee white car.
And they had gone to the bother of unbolting these three signs. There's the 100, yeah. I'm not sure. What's that 100 sign represent?
that's the White Atlantic Way. There's right, okay. above that we sign.
I get you. Okay. Right. All right. So if anyone's seen these vehicles or this vehicle or has any further information, you heard from Gardaí, get in touch with Buncranagh Garda Station. Because I'll tell you, if there's a value to these signs or these people are just agents, which they obviously are, it could be any sign anywhere across the region either. So we need to keep an eye out and find out what's going on, I think, Robert.
Yeah, there were four young fellows that was in the car and all that because they all hopped in. The doors were open, the bit was open, ready to go.
Okay, mind boggles, you know, it really
the luck around 17, 18 around that.
Yeah.
I couldn't get close enough to get them, you know.
No, okay. But you saw them in the act, so it's a firm sighting of a vehicle. All right, Robert, thanks for that. We'll keep our eyes peeled, as I say, any info to Angada Síochána. Thanks very much, though, for highlighting it, firstly, through your social media as well, but also coming on to us here on Highland Radio. And hopefully this car will be spotted and those individuals spoken to, in inverted commas. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Right, thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Actually, that sounded quite sinister. When I said spoken to, I meant by the Gardaí. I didn't mean anything more controversial than that. All right, we're going to talk politics, GE24, after these. Okay, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And it's time, I suppose, to discuss in earnest what may or may not transpire here in Donegal as part of General Election 2024. John McAteer, good morning to you. How excited are you?
Terribly excited. I could not be more excited in my whole life.
Looks like possibly could fall off that chair with excitement.
I'm even more excited because I've given the dog a good walk.
Okay.
So now Glash has fed and wathered and walked.
Well, as long as Glash is all right, the election will look after itself.
Certainly will.
One of our go-to political analysts as well is Paddy Rooney. Good morning to you, Paddy. Thank you so much for your time.
John and Greg, how are you? Good morning.
It's good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Right, okay. So there's five seats up for grabs in Donegal. Fine Gael running Nicky Bradley and John McNulty. Fianna Fáil, Charlie McConnell Logue. Pat the Cope Gallagher and Claudia Kennedy. Aintu is running Mary Sweeney. Sinn Féin, Pierce Doherty, Padraig McLaughlin, and the recent addition of Noel Jordan. Independents, Thomas Pringle, Jerry McKeever, Frank O'Donnell, Niall McConnell. Kevin Sharkey, he's a late entrant. The Irish Freedom Party are running Eamon McGee. The Irish People National Alliance, Kim McMenamin. 100% Redress, Charles Ward. The Green Party, Nuala Carr. Carol Gallagher of People Before Profit. And Donna Murray for Independent Ireland. I think they have until Saturday to throw their hat into the ring. So that field may grow. So where do we start? I'll start with you, if that's okay, John McAteer. And listen, I know politicians don't want to hear this because no seat is safe and all that kind of stuff. But how many seats do you believe you can predict for certain, and who are they?
The two Sinn Féin seats, despite recent appeals, should be dead safe given that they had 45% at the last election and they can lose a fair bit of that. They're just 34,900 votes. And you go from that down to the Fianna Fáil situation with just over 20% of the vote between. It was Charlie McConnell and Pat the Cope Gallagher. It's the same again. I get the feeling that Sinn Féin are quietly confident that they can win back that seat, that they can get two seats. Of course, the other sitting TD here is Thomas Pringle. Has done very, very well the last time, but maybe a bit different this time given that Sinn Féin is running a third candidate and they surprised us all with Noel Jordan up in Mount Charleston from Inver, could capture a decent vote. But all of that might be in conflict with Thomas Pringle's chances. He had 5,000 and 5,475 or so. Very low percentage-wise, 7%, but with a lift of almost 2,800 preferences from Sinn Féin. He was literally home and dry, and he went on to take that third seat, and he took it very comfortably. So Joe McHugh was in there. It's hard to determine what impact Joe McHugh's departure from politics will have.
You with Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, you instantly quote votes that they should be enough. Right, but that's absent with Fine Gael because there was a sizable Fine Gael vote. But you don't mention it getting either Nicky Bradley or John McNulty over the line. Why is that?
I didn't get to that bit yet.
Get to it now, then.
get to it now. John McNulty is up in Kilcare, has been campaigning very, very strongly. Nikki Bradley lives on the outskirts of Milford. She's a senator, made so by Letitia. I have no idea how they're going to do because it's early days yet. It's only the fifth day of polling, so it's much, much too early. Sinn Féin will be hunting for a seat along with the 100% Redress Party. And that's the new dimension in here, that you have this group of campaigners who have four council seats and got 9.5% in the local elections. Will they hold on to that? Will they increase it? They actually have to increase it because, you know something, there's going to be a very, very, very big poll this time. Mm-hmm. You may have a quota of more than 14,000. You know, there's an electorate there I would reckon to be in the region of about 134,500. So votes are going to be only relevant to the fact that somebody else is away ahead of you or behind you.
Ivan Yates was speculating nationally that Charles Ward might take Pringle's seat. Now, that didn't make any sense to me before I bring Paddy in here, because I would have thought strategically, if Charles Ward is going to be successful, Inishowen has to come out big for him, because whether or not people like it or not, it is the epicentre of this crisis. And if they do, the threat could be more likely to Charlie McConnellogue or to Pádraig McLoughlin. With that in mind, do you believe the addition by Sinn Féin of Noel Jordan was maybe to offset that to some extent, so that if Charles Ward does begin to eat into the Sinn Féin vote, that there might be votes there being gathered up in the southwest of the county that might get the likes of a Pádraig McLoughlin over the line? Or am I misreading that?
Well, you know, Noel Jordan is a well-known figure. In Donegal town, he got 1,500 votes or thereabouts, and it made common sense to run him there because it's become a flashpoint for votes for all the candidates. John McNulty should be quite strong in that Donegal southwest area. He has a business there, filling station, same in Stranraer, should be well known up the Finn Valley. John McNulty should be in pole position to head up the Fine Gael challenge. I'm not too sure what Nicky Bradley's situation will be because based in Milford, she's got to get out of the Milford area. She's got to hoover up a lot of Joe McHugh's vote. And I remember going into that election the last time, Joe McHugh was a very senior cabinet minister in the Department of Health. He struggled to get that seat, and were it not for Martin Harley delivering a very strong 3,000 votes to him, you know, he wouldn't have got there.
So do you believe Fine Gael will retain a seat in this election?
At this point in time, I couldn't say that I believe it. I wouldn't be confident of it.
Okay.
I'm not seeing them. When you're out and about over the weekend, you see a lot of things going on. It's been a very proactive campaign, and the campaign is ongoing very, very strongly. The posters tell a lot of stories. Even the 100% Redress parties have a publicity up on the Fannin Peninsula, just right outside Kirriekeel there. Fianna Fáil, Mary T. Sweeney's Ain't the Party. Fine Gael's posters are in short supply by the shape of things.
I get the feeling that John McNulty is pushing harder in East Donegal, Letterkenny, and up into Milford than Nicky Matt Bradley might be. I did note there was a full page feature or article in your paper. There's ads going promoting his businesses. I believe there's a strategy there. I'm not sure if you agree or disagree.
I'm not commenting on that. I wrote the story.
Okay, so it was a story. All right,
The day after John McNulty was selected for Fine Gael, he contacted me to say would it be okay to send me press releases, and I said by all means.
But that's my point. Yeah. He says
maybe John, you sit down and talk to me.
Good.
And I managed to do that.
Right. Okay.
Quite a number of people.
I'm not questioning it. There's nothing. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on. Don't worry about that.
I don't mind. You can.
Okay. Paddy Rooney. I suppose, and I'll let you meander your view as you'll wish. But for you, is there any certainties, as much as I say politicians don't like us saying that, but can you sort of pick any number out of the five that you would confidently put on a betting slip if you were so inclined?
Well, you know, a casual observer looking at the constituency in Donegal might think, you know, that it's fairly easy to call and has been down the years. I actually ran into outgoing TD Joe McHugh last Sunday in a shop in Carrigart, a shop that you know very well, Greg. And he made a very interesting observation to me. He said that in the last six general elections, five very well-established TDs with deep political roots actually lost their seat. And that's starting off with Paddy Hart in 1997, up to Pat the Cope the last time. And there was big casualties, the likes of Padraig McLaughlin, Mary Cockton and so on in between that. And that carnage actually could have been a lot greater than that if Niall Blaney had actually, who was a sitting TD at the time in 2011, had entered the fray. He might have been caught up in the storm at that time. And of course, if you go way, way back then, further than that, Thomas Gilday, he didn't take out a sitting TD at the time because Pat the Cope went off to Europe. So the constituency is a lot more fluid than I suppose that people think. And it's not that long ago that, from I think it was from 1997 up to 2007, five out of the six sitting TDs in Donegal were from the Fianna Fáil gene pool. Now, Fianna Fáil go into this election with only one sitting TD, so there's been a huge change there. If I was asked, I know you were pressing John, see what's going to happen here. I think there's two cast iron certainties in it, if I was betting my house on it. One is that Piers Doherty will probably head the poll and take one seat. He won't like me saying that. And he'll take one seat. And the other cast iron certainty is that Fianna Fáil will take one seat. After that, it's completely fluid and anything will happen. Because it has happened in the past and there's a fair indication it's going to happen in the future.
Just in relation to that, when you say that one Fianna Fáil will win one seat, obviously that leaves, there's three candidates. Did I mention Claudia Kennedy? I did. Charlie McConnell, Pat the Cope Gallagher and Claudia Kennedy. Not in any way ruling out Claudia Kennedy, don't get me wrong, but what happens if there is one seat in there? What has to happen or what might happen for Pat the Cope Gallagher to edge out Charlie McConnell Logan and Claudia Kennedy?
Well, I'm saying that there's a cast iron certainty that they're going to get one. I'm not ruling out that they're going to get two. They will be in the frame for two. But it's all going to depend actually on one thing, on what the electorate views of Charlie McConnell Logan is. Pat the Cope actually isn't in control of his own destiny here. It's actually Charlie McConnell Logan is probably in control of Pat the Cope's destiny. And by that, I mean two things. John and I have spoken off camera about this many times before. Charlie McConnell Logan's base in Inishowen is right at the epicentre of the Mica, as both of you know, and your listeners will know that. It's no great news to anybody. Now, the electorate there can take a very angry view of that, and they can turn away from him. Remember, he dropped 4,500 votes in the last election that he did the previous one. He went from 12.5 down to around 8 or whatever, which was a big drop. And if he was to be hit anymore with that, because his problem will be, I remember being at the count the last time, and even though he had got a healthy first preference vote, his campaign team were very, very concerned about the fact that where was his transfers going to come from?
Yeah, just one more question.
If Pat the Cope's ahead of him, he will stay ahead of him. And the other point I was going to make about Charlie McConnell Logan, he's in a very happy position, is there's two sides to the coin here. John McAteer made the point to me before, and it was a very good one, in the fact that maybe the people in Donegal would think, well, it's better to have a minister here than not. And that's...
Yeah, but the ministerial position is not guaranteed either, but I take your point. But is it... And I say what I'm trying to do is drill into how people might think. So if I were a Bonkrana Fianna Fáil voter, Paddy, but I'm a bit peed off with Charlie McConnell Logan, with having a strong candidate like Pat the Cope Gallagher, does that make it easier for me to vote with my party but not necessarily with a particular candidate?
Well, I suppose, am I living in a mica-affected house or not? Because if I'm living in a mica-affected house, I'm not going to be very, very happy. And it might be the toss of a coin if I'm a regular supporter of Charlie McConnell Logan's, whether I continue to vote for him or not. If I'm not in a mica-affected house, and may well stick with them, because it is highly probable that Fianna Fáil will be in government the next time in one coalition form of another. And given that, it is highly probable that Charlie McConlough will probably be a government minister. Okay. It's less likely that Pat the Cope will be. So that promise on the horizon might give him a lift of sorts.
Yeah. All right, last question before a break, and not want to over-focus on Charlie McConlough, because there's many more people in the offing. But say, for instance, the recent announcement, John, of Buncrana Leisure Centre missing out on funding. Really has bothered people in that area. How impactful is a decision like that from government in someone's chances of getting re-elected?
I thought it was quite ridiculous to think that Buncrana Leisure Centre, after all these years and with the population in South Inishowen, that they were left out of funding. I think that was a major gaffe, and it could cost Fianna Fáil votes. Mm. In fact, I feel it will cost them votes unless Charlie McConlough can come up with some promise to them over the next 2.5 weeks. And it's very possible that it's a very promising time here in Ireland, and Charlie McConlough will be working night and day to maximise that vote. As I say, it's a huge gaffe, but the whole issue in Inishowen is going to be based on one or two things. Primarily, does the Fianna Fáil people up in Inishowen and the people of Inishowen themselves want to hold on to their two TDs, very strong, influential voices, Paddy McLaughlin, Sinn Féin's chief whip, very articulate, very hard-working, Charlie McConlough, a very senior minister. Are we going to vote for those in Inishowen, or do we opt to vote for 100% Mike Redress? Because remember, Mike Redress has 52% of the vote in Inishowen, and they have 3,840 votes there.
Another reason you know that the parties are worried about 100% Redress, because Mary Lou McDonald came into the studio there last week or the week before, Paddy, and she obviously was very well briefed and made a specific point to say that if you want end-to-end scheme, if you want 100% redress with the best will in the world, there's no point voting for a single-issue candidate. Now, Charles Ward would say he is not, but this is the leader of the party in Donegal quite clearly saying, if you want something delivered, it has to be with Sinn Féin. So they obviously see the threat of 100% redress themselves.
Well, it's very clear, because actually around our area here anyway, in Letterkenny, there is a lot of postering on behalf of Sinn Féin. And every place that you see a poster for Charlie Ward, there is a big 6x4 poster for Sinn Féin as well, in white, with a big green tagline in the middle about that they're supporting the 100 redress. So they are afraid internally because they give the impression of that. It's a bit hollow, though, for them to say that, because we've had a government minister from this constituency who was sitting around the cabinet table, and he had to resign out of frustration because he wasn't able to get what he wanted over the line. And he was succeeded then by another TD from a different party sitting around the cabinet table. And he hasn't been able to get all of what the redress people are able to do as well. Why do Sinn Féin think that they're going to be able to deal with the Department of Public Expenditure and senior civil service in the Department of Finance, who are really the people that's holding this up?
Paddy Rooney, is Mary T. Sweeney an aim to a dark horse in this election, or maybe a brightly coloured horse? Is this the election that what she's been doing in the last number of elections and with the rest of the team here, that she breaks through and is a surprise victor for a seat?
Well, she could, but it's unlikely, because she would have to make a massive improvement on her previous performance to get up there. I mean, John is talking about the quota being between 13 and 14,000. I'd say somewhere about, there will be candidates, or probably candidates elected that reach in the quota, but they'll be up in the high 11,000s, you know, 11,700 or 11,800. It's a huge jump for her. She's going to have to be very attractive to transfers from other candidates. And I suppose came into being primarily because Pather Tobin left the Sinn Féin party over the Eighth Amendment. That if that's still very prominent in her policy or whatever, and you know, a sizable amount of the population rejected that or whatever. It's possible, of course, but it's a big reach into nationally. Some days they're 2%, some days they're 5%. They're bobbing up and down. Of course, John McAteer always tells us about the 3% margin of error either way. It's a big ask for her to get into the frame here. Big, big ask.
John, in terms of independents, other than the sitting TD, Thomas Pringle, and, you know, those who aren't independent but are running for smaller parties, the Irish Freedom Party, Irish People and National Alliance, parties that maybe their message on immigration for some of them might resonate quite well. Is there going to be any breakthrough in that regard, in your view?
I don't actually
see it. We didn't see it in the council elections, and that's what we can go by.
We didn't see it in the council elections at all, and that's very, very recent. And maybe at this point, that far right that we were hearing all about in June is not as relevant as we might have thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't be categorizing it as far right. It's not just a phrase. I appreciate, but you're entitled to say what you want to.
All of them, well, I'm going to say it anyway. All of those candidates contribute in their own way to the process of democracy. And the fact that so many is running shows that we have a very healthy democracy in here in Donegal and probably across Ireland as well. But we have at least 20 candidates running here, and fair play to them. And you mentioned Mary T. Sweeney. Mary T. Sweeney has a cause and a purpose in relation to anti-abortion and those kinds of issues. And I do admire her stance. She got about 2,400 the last time. Putting those issues out in front of the electorate is very important to Aintu, because Paddy Tobin is one of the most proactive and most dynamic TDs in the Dáil. He's pretty well on the ball about every last issue that comes up.
And they're not extreme, though. Why has Aintu not gathered more national momentum?
It shows you how really difficult it is to get anywhere. Aintu, they're seen as one-dimensional. I mean, majority of people will see that ship has sailed about abortion and marriage equality and all this kind of thing. But nevertheless, these parties, or this party, is out there, founded on that principle, and they're sticking to their principles. And Mary T is a pretty strong voice in Letterkenny, not only at election time, but in various other campaigns throughout the year. And I do admire her for her tenacity.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to do this again if you guys are up for it, and I'm sure you will be. But I want to sort of try and pin you down a little bit. Paddy, I want you to give me five names.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. On the basis that...
And this is open to change.
On the basis that there's 43 constituencies, and on the basis of that the other 42 don't have a very strong local issue like Micah, I think that... there could be Charlie Ward. I'd be very surprised if he's not very, very close to it. Fine Gael's problem might be within. The biggest danger for them is that their two candidates will split the vote down bang in the middle, which could be a problem for them. Pearse Doherty, for sure. One Fianna Fáil, don't ask me to put a name on it, for sure. Micah, for sure. And I won't go beyond that then. I have Thomas Pringle, second Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and a whole mix there.
Right, might be interesting.
About four for two.
Yeah. No, that's actually not terrible. I think Thomas Pringle has a bit of work to do. John?
Pearse Doherty, Paddy McLaughlin, Charlie McConlogue is going to be in there. Thomas Pringle, those could be four seats. There's a toss-up then for that final seat. Pat De Cope is in there in a strong position, given that he has the backing of the government and given that he has done a massive amount of work for the past 4 years. Charlie Ward has to be in there because the survival of that 100% redress as a party is up for grabs. And John McNulty, he could be the surprise element there. So that fifth seat is going to be between De Cope, Ward and McNulty. That's my read on it.
Well, and the exciting thing is we'll revisit this. We'll get back together and see if anything's changed. I must say, and I'm delighted to say, by the way, and I mean this genuinely, I'm delighted to say that Charlie McConlogue has confirmed that he'll be engaging in our debates, which is something I wasn't certain of because of his stance on this programme. But he is going to be taking part...
Like it's in his own best interest.
Yep.
He's very easily talked to. Don't be afraid of him.
I am not, and I'm delighted that he's here. I have nothing against the man. So that's good news. All right, John McAteer, thanks for your time today. We'll do it again. Looking forward to it already. Take care, John. Paddy, as always, a pleasure to hear your views as well. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that was a run-through, an initial run-view of what our guests think might happen in election 24. I've got your predictions here. I'm going to kick off the show tomorrow with them, so stay tuned for that. We have to leave you now. John Breslin's up around the northwest next.